Good afternoon. My name is Kathleen Russell. I'm a PhD candidate in plant breeding at the University of Kentucky under the advising of Dr. David Van Sanford. Part of my dissertation research deals with the selection for tolerance to heat stress in soft red winter wheat using an artificially warmed environment. Climate models are predicting anywhere from a 1 to 3 degrees Celsius increase in temperature by 2050 for the southeastern United States. Crop models that are linked to field data and long-term weather data are predicting that for each 1 degree Celsius increase in temperature, we can expect to see wheat production to decrease by 3 to 8%. Previous research has shown that there is a large amount of genotypic variation for a stimulant contribution to grain filling under heat stress, and that higher temperatures, particularly between anthesis and grain maturity, will lead to decreases in grain yield, primarily because of a shortened grain fill duration. So given this information, the model data, previous research into heat stress tolerance, we wanted to understand what are these predictions going to do for the southeastern United States wheat yields, and how can we produce a screening technique to understand the genotypic variation for the wheat yields that we already have locally adapted in our breeding program. So when we started discussing ways that we could do this in a field environment, it can be a bit difficult to try to simulate an environmental stress, and so we kicked around different ideas, the pros and cons thereof, and so perhaps at the failures of our colleagues, we decided not to go with any type of temporary structure in order to increase the temperature. So what we decided to do was to use soil warming cables. These are typically used in a greenhouse environment to extend the growing season for particular crops. To the best of our knowledge, they have not been used in an agronomic setting like this. So we were trying something new, and I'll kind of talk about how we did it, and then I'll talk about some of the results. So we take these soil warming cables, and we extend them down the plant row in the center between the wheat rows, like you see here. And then we bury them just below the soil surface. So our goal was to just increase the temperature, that same threshold that climate models are predicting. So these are programmed to heat the rhizosphere between 1 and 3 degrees Celsius. The programming is accomplished by putting 50 thermocouple soil and air temperature sensors out into the field. And these are sampled on 15-minute intervals. And that data is then fed into a data logger that is adjacent to the field. You can see all of those blue wires that come up. Those are then being fed into the data logger, and each one of those is an individual temperature sensor in the field. So those temperature sensors are both within the row and then also just above the soil into the canopy taking air temperatures. And given this, it was a bit of a pilot experiment, we weren't really sure how these cables would do, and thankfully we did get a good warming treatment across both seasons. What you're seeing here is all 10 soil warming cables averaged together. So there is quite a bit of fluctuation there within, but the data logger program is telling the cables to come on and off based off of that threshold versus the adjacent control plots. So it's all right there within the same footprint, if you will. We had a little bit more trouble into the spring months getting the threshold to maintain because the controlled environment that was right there also had warmer soil temperatures. In the winter months, we did see some fluctuations, and certainly there were some issues with extreme cold temperatures, but overall, we really did get a nice warmed environment. So we definitely kept a close eye on this experiment because we had not done something like this in the past, and we weren't really sure how these cables would perform, if they would perform. One thing we did notice, and hopefully you can see it in this photo, is the warm treatment appeared to be a little bit drier. So we wanted to make sure that soil moisture, plant available water, was not a limiting factor. So we did place soil moisture sensors into the field. These were also taken on taking data on a 15-minute sampling interval. And thankfully, while there was a bit of a decline in soil moisture, it was not a significant decrease to plant available water. The drying effect was really more superficial. It didn't go too far down into the soil profile. Additionally, with all field work, the weather is just one variable you can't predict. And so temperatures were largely, on average, pretty close to what we are used to, some extreme fluctuations into the winter months. But what we did not expect was the very high, above-average snowfall amounts, in some orders of a tenfold increase. The cables did melt the snow if it was a very small event, but the larger snowfall events, there did not seem to be any type of excess melting effect from the cables. Okay, so that kind of describes how we did it. So now let me explain what was the goal of this research. So we did this across two growing seasons, and we wanted to screen genotypes based off of photoperiod classification. So 40 genotypes were screened. These genotypes varied based off of their photoperiod sensitivity at the A1 and D1 loci. So they're either insensitive, sensitive, or the combination thereof. These were planted in twin head rows with two replications. For those of you not familiar with a head row, if you can see down the longer plant row, you may see small segments. Each individual smaller segment of a row is actually the experimental unit here. And so these were replicated within the two treatments, an ambient control, and then the artificially warmed. So perhaps the greatest impact that we saw was the shift on in phenology based off of warming. We saw a significant shift by 5 days on average across both growing seasons. Here you're seeing the genotypes combined. This acceleration of growth was carried out then throughout the growing season through maturity. Here you're seeing the two treatments about 10 days before harvest. The warm treatment here on the left is not showing virtually any green vegetation remaining, and the control environment, quite a bit of green vegetation remains. So that acceleration in growth was maintained from the get-go. We did see a significant yield decline in the warm environment with the genotypes combined across both years. We saw a 12.7% decline in 2014 and a 3.8% decline in 2015. If you remember that first slide I showed where crop models are predicting about a 3 to 8% decrease in yield with each 1 degree temperature increase. We're seeing about similar results here. We did see a not significant but an increase in biomass both years. Early season growth seems to be stimulated by the warm treatment. Here on the left, you can see the larger flush of growth compared to a control plot there on the right. But this did not seem to translate into any productive tillers or yield gains. So the biomass is perhaps just a bit of a remnant. If I break these genotypes down into the photoperiod sensitivity, the differences were not significant, but we did see a much larger yield decline in the photoperiod sensitive genotypes compared to the photoperiod insensitive genotypes. So the warmed environment potentially does have a greater negative yield on photoperiod sensitive genotypes. Because the large amount of genotypic variation that we wanted to explore was based off of assimilate remobilization capacity in a shortened grain fill period, we really wanted to dissect the nitrogen story here. So we took vegetative samples at anthesis and maturity, and even despite the shift in phenology, vegetative N at anthesis was not different amongst the two treatments. However, in 2014, it's much more apparent at maturity that there is residual nitrogen remaining in the warm treatment compared to the control. That also then translates to lower grain nitrogen in comparison to the control. In 2015, these differences were not as apparent, but again, we're looking at the genotypes combined, and just for purposes of time, I can't really break out all of the genetic variation, but if you look at just the range in genetic variation for the maturity nitrogen content, 50% of the genotypes are actually showing this residual N. So the results really are kind of consistent across the growing seasons, even if when the genotypes are combined, it's not quite as apparent. So looking further into the nitrogen story here, if we break out nitrogen use efficiency by its components, nitrogen uptake efficiency and nitrogen utilization efficiency, we're not seeing any significant differences in nitrogen uptake efficiency. That's sort of confirmed by that vegetative N not being significantly different at anthesis. However, if we look at nitrogen utilization efficiency, we see significant declines in the warm treatment across seasons. And so heat stress appears to negatively impact nitrogen utilization efficiency more than uptake efficiency, and it does have a significant negative impact on nitrogen use efficiency in general in the warmed environment. One other scenario we wanted to make sure that we checked into was, do these warming cables have an effect on root trait architecture something that would possibly confound our results based off of the changes in fertility uptake. And so what we did was we harvested a subsector of the roots at Anthesis, and we ran those traits through WinRhizo software, and we also weighed them for biomass. And so there were no significant differences amongst the treatments for the root traits, both when genotypes are combined and then also for individual genotypes. So the warming treatment at least does not appear to alter the root architecture here. Okay, so how does this work then as far as a screening technique for heat stress tolerance in a breeding program? It's difficult to talk about all these genotypes in a short amount of time, but we know the genotype by environment interaction in a normal breeding program is difficult to sort through under normal conditions, let alone when you're trying to screen for environmental stress, which is that much more difficult. But we do desire genotypic stability across years. So just a snapshot of some of the genotypes that we've been looking at, we are seeing genotypes that are having significant yield declines across seasons, genotypes that are showing some variability across season, and then we're seeing some genotypes that are actually showing yield increases across seasons. So we do have some confidence that we can identify genotypes that are more heat stress tolerant based off of this type of screening technique. And just to note, there are 16 genotypes that are showing an increase in yield in the warmed environment and 20 that are showing an increase in biomass production in the warmed environment. So as far as conclusions from this experiment, we believe that the increase in temperature will have the largest impact on the shift in phenology. This is really of greater concern because if we're moving our heading dates up any further, we really have a larger consequence with any type of spring freeze. This field screening method does show potential for selecting genotypes that are well adapted to shifts in temperature regionally and for incorporation of those genotypes then into plant breeding programs. And there's the potential for additional genotype by warming and management combinations using this type of screening. So with that, I just want to thank the folks who provided funding and provided setup and harvest and a lot of help with the data collection here. So I'll take any questions.
If that's the case, you may have the opportunity to see if the relative responses you induce by treatment also occur due to natural fluctuation.
Yeah, this is what sort of attracted us to this type of method. It's not perfect by any means. It definitely allows for to maintaining the same field conditions, though, from the control to the warm treatment that you may not get in a temporary structure and that you may not be able to ascertain just from a crop model itself.
No, I'm talking about variation from 1 year to the next, 2014 with a different year to 2015.
Are you implying that the variation, though, is different than we would see in a typical breeding scenario? Yes. So the as far as the yield decline out on a genotype level, there are some fluctuations between seasons, and that may be that result is the variation in the control climate across seasons. But overall, from the treatment level, the controls were yielding higher than the warm treatment across both seasons. I don't know if I answered that correctly or. Yeah, so the way that the data logger program is set up is to maintain 3 degrees. It doesn't always get there, and then there is a deadpan programmed into it so that if it gets right at the 3 degree, we didn't want them to run consistently, mostly from a resource standpoint, energy use. But once it gets to the 3 degree temperature threshold and then it turns off, once it drops by 1 degree, it will kick back on. Yeah, and if you look at it by average by month, it fluctuates, but we're staying within that 1 to 3 degree range, which is sort of the best that we could do given the field conditions.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow in, and you've compare a kid that a kid was mid-row.
Mm-hmm.
So when you measure the temperature, is that at the plant or is that at the mid-row?
Yeah, I you know, considered these things. We didn't want to measure the temperature right at the cable because we were really measuring the radiative heat from that. So the temperature sensors are within the plant row. They're directly placed between plants.
Other than the nitrogen in the crane, is it having a level of other nutrients?
We did not. We took general soil samples just to get an idea of adequate soil fertility, but we did not break down the vegetative material into any other nutrients.
Thank you.
Nope.
Excellent. I'd like to give a hand to all the students that competed tonight. They did a great job. And then I would also like to invite you to stay for the
business meeting
for the. And okay, go ahead.
I'll take over to conduct the business meeting. My name is again George Paul, and once again thank you all the audience for being present for this session, and I request and urge you to stay back for the business meeting because it is very important for our next year's planning and execution. We have three agenda, and we would try to fulfill all this agenda very quickly. So kindly stay back.
Can you announce that the judges?
Yeah, the judges can give their marking to Oscar or to me now.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sorry. Not too many people staying back for the business meeting. So that's the normal scenario in every session, every community. Nothing new with this one. Sorry? Yeah. People who are present over here, the three agenda. First, I would like to thank Oscar Monge for his leadership over the past year. We had a good turnover in our symposium that was conducted yesterday. There were around 70 to 75 people, and that was a good crowd. That was really a good crowd for a symposium. Again, like to thank Oscar's leadership capabilities for attracting good speakers to the symposium. We have excellent speakers in the symposium, and he single-handedly approached all of them and conducted that thing. And I really thank him for and thank him on behalf of the community for taking care of all the responsibilities. We had a good budget available, and I pitched in to write a proposal to get the what is known as the enhancement funds. So we got a good amount in the enhancement fund. You remember the
almost 3,000
we could bring in as program enhancement fund. So we wrote a couple of pages of proposal and submitted it, and we got accepted and got a good funding. So that was used for supporting some of the speakers in the symposium. So the first agenda is done. The second agenda is the election of the new vice chair for the global climate change community. That would be the second agenda, and before I forget the third agenda, I will declare it now itself, because I was trying to remember the third one. So the third one is we need to think about what would be our symposium or session topics in the forthcoming next year's meeting. So our second agenda, the election of the vice chair for global climate change community. If we have anyone here present who wants to...
One self-nominated, but, you know, that's...
Who is that?
I have it on the email.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So self-nomination is welcomed. You want to propose somebody, that's again welcome, or we can postpone it for online voting, online request for filling up this position.
What is the deadline for having the nomination or having the election?
As such, there is no such deadline, but the tenure starts from 1st January. So we should have somebody in position before that that date, the 1st January. So Oscar would act as the chair till the end of this year, and he has to wind up all the financial obligations and file, clear up everything before handing it over to me. So so we need to have somebody in position as before the end of this year. So
I guess I would suggest that we send out a vote suggestion. So please make suggestions, and then the only constraint on that is that if you're suggesting somebody, they have to be able to agree to be suggested.
So any interest in topics for next year symposium and session?
That was a faux pas on the scheduling, and I think what happened was we had a telecast. The symposium got accepted for a telecast, and there was 10 extra people that we didn't get to see in addition to the 70. So, but that other symposium was the AgMed, right?
Yeah, no, this isn't a criticism.
But that one's entirely modeling.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say, you know.
Right.
But we are in a modeling, you know, our section is modeling, not modeling, so you want to have modeling this as well. I mean,
right.
That was one thing I was thinking this morning, that maybe we focus more on the non-model stuff, just experimental data or observational data, or model, but then, you know, we're in a modeling section, so it doesn't make a lot of sense. But I guess what I'm just saying, I don't know how you make a clear distinction between what our...
Well, I was struggling with that this year, and it fits under the climatology, you know, and we're not the only ones doing global climate change. All these other communities are doing their own climate change stuff.
Yeah.
So that's why I went and said, instead of having our own little climate change thing, let's use it. I think with the amount of people that attended, next year we can invite a whole new set of speakers from outside to bring to the society. I would suggest we go to that model, you know. And then maybe maintain the general sessions for just non-modeling or, you know, but anyway, you, okay.
You have a symposium as well as a general session.
Yeah. And then the poster session coming up.
Well, so, I mean, after you pulled it together, I mean, so the extreme events, and so, like you said, was also really well attended. And then is that still a big topic, right?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, we could do extreme weather, or we can tweak it, you know, to maybe just focus on heat, or what I'm looking at is drought by temperature interactions, or whatever the modeling community needs, we can bring the experts, because they won't have time in their own sessions to bring anybody, right? So I think we can maybe dovetail with, I mean, you're in the AdMib, so if you guys find out what the gaps are.
Well, that's one thing I was going to say, too. I mean, the AdMib, I don't know what venture is going to hold, but they kind of broaden their focus much more. Before it was just modeling comparisons, and it was CO2 temperature and water fantastic. And now it's much larger. And I don't know if next year.
It's ballooned, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So it's hard to say where they're going to go. But I'll notice a lot of things that they're doing right within the function. I'm sorry, I'm not adding any of this discussion to make it worse.
Now I'm wondering if there's something in the idea of what sort of international components. I know there are a lot of countries now that are interested in starting up their own global climate change research programs that didn't happen. And you know, the way they're doing.
Invite international speakers?
Yeah, like, you know, we might not need more than 4 or 5 speakers. And there are probably some already here in the US as well.
Right.
You know, what are the different, what are each country facing? I mean, that one speaker here from the Arab Emirates. You know,
right.
Hajjaj. And have to identify some people for that.
Just Dr. Aiken.
There are many things that I'd like to hear, but I'm not. When I think of climate change, I've got a time reference that to me has got to be pretty low. So I'm thinking of problems that involve implicitly a long time frame. One thing that might fit would be a joint session with leaders. Because leaders are doing things that are going to have to affect 20 years from now. They have to anticipate. But they have to have material they can pull off the shelf that will be appropriate in the future. Probably they're no longer actively breathing. Mm-hmm. So there's a substantial lag in the breathing process that anticipating climate change would hopefully help them make better decisions.
Yeah, but I mean, like if you wanted to bring in speakers on breeder and climate change, would we be several categories? Or
I would be thinking about what kind of stress tolerances might be appropriate, and abiotic stress for heat and drought, but also there are biotic stresses that may not be considered as much, which may become more prevalent, or the pathogens which become bigger problems.
So you can have something with adaptation, then you need a broader thing, adaptation, and then, the genetics really has not been looked at. I mean, we'll say adaptation, I think, of light disease management, but the genetics just kind of gets, well, we know they're going to adapt, we don't think that's exactly what they're going to do.
Well, they're development. As she showed in the last talk show, they develop for them. To yield potential. So, what are great responses?
The big issue is the growing season, the temperature short of growing season, instead of some way to have to have more solar radiation.
Yeah, well, but if you notice, if you go to the Crop Science Society session, they're already dealing with a lot of those topics. So that was what I found, that they're all overlapping if we can maybe team up and bring people they want to see.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll write down that.
Yeah, I got it.
Any suggestions?
Perfect. So I think I'll frame an email with all the suggestions and send it out. I think it would be nice to have a joint session. But still, I think somewhere we have to narrow down to something with a little more specific for people to come together. The one thing that pulled the crowd in the symposium was the extreme events. So we could get people from ecology, from biodiversity, from all the different fields talking about the extreme event impacts. That was something interesting, and that was outside the typical agricultural regime. We will be thinking about more into breeders and global climate change, and we'll try to come up with some topics and let's see. Any other suggestion?
Yeah,
Okay. So, okay, so.
Yeah. I don't know if you've finished your assessment. Thank you.
So. With that, I think we are done with the business meeting. We covered everything. We will have an email for the selection of the vice chair of this community, plus email for discussing the session topics for the forthcoming meeting in 2016. With that, Oscar, anything else?
No.
With that, we can adjourn this meeting. Thank you.
Yes, we have a